Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, what is your favorite three-letter word in the English language? Don't say dog. Don't say cat.
Okay, one of my favorite words has got to be fat. Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's a good word.
The program today is in
Some
defense of fat.
Some people think it's a bad word. Fat gets
a tough rap.
Yes, I agree.
So,
well, there's a lot of purpose, a reason for it. You know, you and I were talking on the way over. It creates texture, and it gives good texture to things. And it is essential to – it's one of the reasons why you don't want to cook everything well done, because the fat is going to melt out of something that's well done. There will be little fat left, and that's why the – and juice and moisture. That's why your food really has no texture left, and – it's not really viable at that point. I mean, you're just.
What does fat mean if it's like this? It's fat you cook with. It's fat that you fry in. It's fat that you make a dressing with.
Right, and it has
it's
so many.
It's fat that you finish the sauce with.
Mm-hmm.
It's fat that's part of a piece of meat or fish.
Right.
Or chicken.
Mm-hmm.
It's fat that, you know, it's their nut oils that we use for different things.
It's many forms, and, you know, even when you think about the difference between cooking something in, say, peanut oil or corn oil to fry it, which has a high flash point, which is one of the reasons, meaning that it burns at a higher temperature, and when you're using something over and over and over again throughout the course of a service in a restaurant, you need it to have a long life, and that can be over the course of a night or it can be over the course of a couple of days. You never want to use fat fryer for too long. But, you know, if you were to change that to lard or change it to pork, you know, some other sort of pork fat, you know, or duck fat, you know, that really changes the whole taste of what you're frying. So
let's try to structure what our conversation is a little bit. We're going to have to get into olive oil versus butter at some point, because that's an essential debate for us.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Well, and I love both, so let's not let Tony make everyone think that I hate olive oil for some reason, because, for God's sake.
You love both, but...
Mm-hmm, I do. And I use a ton of olive oil, and that is because... And I use different types of olive oil, and I think, you know, I think a lot of people now understand one of the things about olive oil is that it needs to be fresh, and that you are looking for a harvest date. And that's pretty common now on bottles, so that's a wonderful change.
It's not always easy to find. That's one of the things. For any fat that you're using, you need it to be relatively fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's a nut oil or an extra virgin olive oil has to do with the acidity level in the oil, you know, and the fact that it's a free run. It's not a press oil,
mm-hmm.
which gives all kind of other sort of, I don't know, natural but still sort of like byproducts and volatile acids to the oil that you would be having otherwise. But the freshness of it, because olives are a fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of weirdly, it's like a fruit oil. If it doesn't taste and smell like that it's fruity somehow, you have a problem with your olive oil.
Definitely. Well, and all fat, I mean, there's one of the reasons that most butter used to be salted is because salt acts as a preservative. So, you know, there's the side of that as well to consider is that when you are using an olive oil, what flavor profile are you looking for? And with butter, are you looking for salted or unsalted butter? And are you looking for butter that has a higher fat content than another butter? You know, just to sort of, it all comes down to what is your use of the fat? What are you doing with it? So, and the debate between the two is one is without a doubt healthier than the other. And that's you know, one of the reasons why you like to cook with olive oil. And that's one of the reasons why I don't care. Because I don't. I'm a chef.
The truth.
I'm trying to make the best food I can possibly make.
There we go. We backed our way into the truth.
I didn't say I didn't like olive oil. I just said that, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And you poo-pooed earlier something about...
I poo-pooed nothing
you
at all.
You poo-pooed the fat is flavor. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Fat absolutely is flavor. And, you know, it's essential to so many different dishes. So let's talk about...
Fat has flavor.
Mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, duck fat tastes different from lamb fat.
Right.
It tastes different from walnut oil. It tastes different from really pretty tagliache olive oil from Liguria, or really strong peppery olive oil from Sicily, from Frantoia cultivars, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask them about olive cultivars. I can give you 45 minutes of incredibly snoozy information about.
Mm-hmm. I wish you wouldn't.
Polyphenols, yeah.
No, yeah, that's I wish you wouldn't say polyphenols either.
But you're going to have to allow me to get functional on the fat conversation. Okay.
Let's do it.
It's and you referenced early on a comment that I made about fat is texture first, right? It has flavor, but it provides texture first. That's why we initially like it. That incredibly, that hockey puck-like chicken breast that we're all terrified of receiving at some cookout or at, you know, mm-hmm. some political fundraiser or something. You know, God bless the candidate or whatever it might be. The thing that has, quote unquote, no fat, it's because it has no texture. That's what happens. You're talking about the overcooked steak or the piece of meat that there's no juice. There's no juice because there's no fat. All the moisture is cooked out of it, including the fat,
mm-hmm.
which is what sort of like that is what provides the attractive texture between the sinews of the muscle.
Right.
You know, so and just in the meat or whatever it is itself, I mean, my baby loves avocado. Why? That's the fattiest vegetable.
Yeah, I love right? avocado too. Avocado is amazing. It
but
does
but,
have a
but
high
it has
fat
that
content.
Sensuous texture.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's mm-hmm. that's what's interesting about. Yes, I said sensuous texture about a vegetable. That's correct.
Uh-huh.
So I mean that, but the function of fat in as just a content. Is texture first, and then the question is how strong a flavor do you want, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, what, like your favorite fat, like immediately coming to mind is what?
Butter. Cream.
There you go.
Butter and cream, same thing.
There you go.
Yep. Of course.
Of course. Okay.
It is.
How come?
Neutral flavor, good for everything.
But remarkable texture.
Of course.
There
yeah.
we go.
Yeah. And, well, you know, and I mean, when you think about it, I buy Trickling Springs cream. It's a local dairy for my coffee in the morning. And there's no better joy than opening that bottle for the first time because the heavy cream is at the top of the bottle. I have to push it down into the rest of the cream. Or I could skim it off and put it on my first cup of coffee. But even I don't do that. And
what?
and
what?
That's, I mean, and that's a beautiful thing that heavy cream is there and that you can have this local, you know.
Well, you don't need a ton of it.
Mm-mm.
I mean, that's the thing is that people,
no.
you know, it's like you get a bag of chips and you eat like 4,000 of them. People are like, chips are bad. I'm like, no, you make bad decisions. You know, eating one piece of bacon is not going to stop your heart.
No, right.
You know,
exactly.
Eating a slab of bacon every day is yeah. going to make you pretty unpopular with a cardiologist.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it all comes down to. You have to fill in with other things like fruits and vegetables and,
yeah,
and
fat
and healthy
doesn't
fish.
Kill people. People healthy kill fish. People, right?
Right. Well, yeah. So throw in some healthy fish with that butter or olive oil that you're using. And you know, it's such an easy way to cook when, you know, if you think about particularly as we're heading into spring and summertime, you know, all the wonderful things that we're going to have, all the great fresh vegetables that are going to be so amazing and full and vibrant of, you know, just flavorful. Just making a little relish with a good oil and tomatoes and herbs or just herbs or, you know, getting that first piece of zucchini and dicing it and just barely sauteing it in a little bit of olive oil. I mean, that makes it's a beautiful vegetable. Throw in a little bit of fresh thyme or throw in a little bit of rosemary just to work in there with it and then remove the rosemary while you're cooking the zucchini or eggplant or whatever it is that you're growing. I mean, it's a beautiful way to cook, and it is not an unhealthy, you know, whether it is butter yeah. or olive oil, I mean, you're going to use so little, and you don't have to do it in all applications.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, to get back to sort of like the function of the fat that you choose, the question is, what is the texture you want it to have if you're using fat as an addition to something? Say, asparagus is still in season. You know, you're cooking asparagus. Do you want to finish it with a little bit of butter? Do you want to finish it with it? Do you want that kind of lavish texture, you know, and that creamy mouthfeel that you get from butter? And do you want that finished with some particular salt? Do you want the fruitiness of some, you know, great big olive oil, you know, that's, I mean, that's a very different feeling, even something as simple as that, right?
Right. Well, and also, what's the menu? You know, is that the main dish? Is that what you're eating for dinner or for lunch? You know, that could be a wonderful lunch, you know, way to eat lunch. Maybe that's all you're having. So maybe it is okay to use a little bit of butter in that instance, or it's light, it's lunch. You want it to be light. Use the olive oil. Use a pretty fruity, beautiful, perfumed olive oil for it. And, you know, it's what courses are coming after it and what are you going to do to those courses? It's a little bit like wine and food pairing is the whole, what's the whole plan?
Well, I think there's also, I mean, that's like in our culture right now, we have everything available to us, you know, and we also have fat that, and we'll get into this in a later segment, but we have fat available to us that we don't even pay attention to half the time that can give great flavor. You know, try to leave that as a little bit of a foodie cliffhanger there, see if you can figure out what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But if it's, I mean, we're headed into beach season, right?
Mm-hmm.
So are you going to put butter on your vegetables or are you going to put really pretty fruity olive oil on your vegetables?
I just think this is a time of the year where you're going to end up using more olive oil. It's just more appropriate for the cooking.
They both have the same quote-unquote fat content. So calorically, they're going to do the same thing, right? I mean, the amount of lipids are exactly the same. Actually, there's a little more milk solid. There's a little more protein in the butter, which would kind of weird somebody out to think that that was somehow healthier. But it's the type of, you know, it's the type of fat is the, what kind of glyceride it is. That's the issue. When you use extra virgin olive oil, do you ever heat it?
Almost never, but I do with some things. For example, if I am eating hot zucchini and it's fresh out of the garden, I will roast it in the oven with a little bit of a very fruity, light extra virgin olive oil because zucchini will absorb. It's a little sponge-like in texture. It will absorb that oil. It is rare that I ever cook with extra virgin olive oil. That's really not what its use is. But there are times. Sometimes when I roast, if I have poblano peppers and I'm doing something very specific with them and I'm not pureeing them, I'm using them as the pepper end result, I will often rub them with extra virgin olive oil. But short of that, no. It's meant for cold purposes.
Now, usually strong vegetables, you can kind of get away with some of that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Eggplant's another thing where it's going to add a certain amount of flavor. Once you get past a certain temperature, it's not going to make a great difference, and it's going to break down. I mean, something long roasted, you know, if it's a piece of meat and using extra virgin, and it's a, you know, something you're roasting for a very long time, it's kind of a total waste.
Right.
That's just going to break down.
Yeah, and then there's also the idea of, you know, maybe you have a piece of cheese. Maybe it's a wonderful fresh piece of goat cheese, and you just want to marinate it a little bit. I mean, that's a great use for a good olive oil with a little bit of fresh herbs and maybe some fleur de sel or something, you know, to have a great salad for lunch. There's just so many uses for fat for so many different reasons.
It's funny. You mentioned the olive oil that the Provençal folks always marinate their fresh chives in. In the southwest of France, you always see walnut oil doing the same thing with a lot of the Pyrenees chefs because that's the abundant and inexpensive local product. I mean, fat is you know, culturally driven too, obviously, agriculturally driven. So when we come back on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll get into that mystery fat that I alluded to. We'll get into deep fat frying and hit Chef Wolf up for a recipe or two for deep fat frying because no southern chef worth a darn if they can't fry well, right, Chef?
That's right.
And we'll talk about fat and pastry as well on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And today's program is in defense of fat.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
Well, and...
There's got to be some nutritionist somewhere who's just throwing stuff at the wall right now. I definitely try really hard to eat healthy, but I'm not going to skip fat as proper part of a meal. Let's talk basics. If you're cooking, people think the first basic thing about fats, you're cooking in fat. You're cooking in a saute pan or a fry pan or a skillet or something like that. You're going to cook a bunch of vegetables. You're going to cook a chicken thigh. You're going to cook a piece of fish. A lot of people think, oh, olive oil is healthy, so I'm going to cook with olive oil. And we talked about not cooking with extra virgin olive oil. So what are some good alternatives? We can just kind of bounce back and forth.
Peanut oil is great, unless you know, a lot of people are allergic to peanut oil. So if you have guests coming over, you probably want to cook in something else, just unless you know that they're not allergic. So, but peanut oil has some good flavor, albeit without producing too much flavor into the food. But canola oil is a nice neutral oil. Corn oil is a nice neutral oil, and very few people have an issue. Actually, I've never heard of anybody telling me they couldn't have either one of those. So I'm sure there's someone out there, but it would be pretty uncommon. So those are great. Again, they have a high flash point. They're great for cooking, and that's what I would use to answer your question.
A high flash point means that you can heat it to several hundred degrees before the oil starts to break down and lose the characteristics that you want it to have to help conduct heat to the to whatever the product is that you're cooking,
And there was a time where...
So you're looking for neutrality, and you're looking for a high flash point.
Mm-hmm.
So peanut, canola...
Corn.
Corn. You see safflower sometimes,
grapeseed oil, right. And the other thing about oil is that you really aren't going to use that much of it. So just make sure you're not, you know, cooking in too much fat. If you're sauteing something, it should be enough fat to coat the bottom of the pan. And your product should be dry. If it's a scallop or something that might have sat in a tiny bit of liquid on a pan or something, you know, you just pat it with a paper towel before you put it into the pan so that you have less splatters. That's one of the things about cooking at high heat and fat.
People struggle with putting the right amount of fat in a pan. They'll put too much, and you end up sort of like shallow frying something.
Right, and that's not what you want to do when you're sauteing.
Or you'll end up putting too little, and then you're burning product, and you never conduct the heat evenly because you don't have enough fat in the pan.
You want to feel that the pan has been well coated on the bottom, you know, when you run the fat around the pan. And if there's a lot excess in the corner, if you were to tip it, then that's too much fat. You want a little bit excess, but not much. And again, you know, maybe even your product going into the pan has a marinade or something on it, or you put a little bit of oil and salt and pepper on it, you know, so then you're going to consider that as well. And that is something you have to do before you grill. You have to, you know, really oil your product down. But again, you can't over-oil your product because then it will just flame up on the grill and taste like kerosene. So that's cooking with fat.
So and essentially cooking with fat for sauté purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And there are times when you're going to want to cook in butter. And all you really need to do to have a higher higher burning point with butter is to remove the milk solids and the water. So
you're talking about cooking in clarified butter.
Right. So you want to clarify.
This is flipping open the Julia Child recipes and that all say, you know, cook XYZ product in clarified butter. And that's a relatively old school French way of cooking an awful lot of things from the north and from the center of the France, because butter's abundant and very high quality. And so to prepare clarified butter, what do you do?
You can melt it gently and skim the solids off the top, and you will also have the milk product go to the bottom of the butter. So at that point, you can either pour it off and leave what's in the bottom of the pan and discard it, or you can boil it. But I think that's probably harder for people. So I would just gently melt it and separate the fat from the solids.
So it's what looks like oil. That's what the clarified butter is.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that looks somehow milky or
scummy. It almost looks scummy.
Want that product. So then you have that clear product
That's what will burn first. That's why you're getting rid of it. Right.
So if you want to do a sole meunière or something like
that
in a pan, you need clarified butter to do that correctly.
Definitely.
So you have your fish, you season it, you pat it down with flour, and it goes into the nice hot fat pan with the
But if you want to turn around
butter.
And serve that sole with brown butter, you need to have solid butter. You need to have whole butter to make the brown butter. So you will now want to just throw either in that same pan after the fish is cooked and is removed and you've knocked out the fat out of the old fat out of that pan. You can add fresh whole butter to it and allow that to brown and add lemon juice. And then you have brown butter, lemon brown butter, or you can do it in a separate pan. Either way, and allow it to brown.
So let's talk animal fats. That to me is sort of the mystery fat for a lot of people, because for me, I grew up with that, you know, that great grandmother who there was one jar after the other underneath the sink.
Yeah, definitely.
of chicken fat, you know, you hear it called schmaltz sometimes, mm-hmm. of duck fat, of goose fat, of pork fat,
beef fat.
Yeah. You know, veal fat, like
wonderful things to.
And she would use them in different pastry. Like if she's making a, she'd make pot pie. She'd use the fat from the half the fat from the animal and half butter to make the crust for the pot pie.
Sounds good.
For whatever the animal was. So if she was doing pot pie with chicken and chicken livers, you know, the crust would be made with the some of the chicken fat as well as the butter, which I don't know that it was exactly the healthiest thing I ever ate, but it wasn't the worst thing I ever ate, I guarantee
you. And those fats are nice to have for biscuits, too. When you're making biscuits, it's good to have, you know, a little bit of chicken fat or whichever you prefer.
Yeah, duck fat in biscuits is pretty...
Or pork fat.
Duck fat has a certain sweetness to a pork fat, of course.
I love duck fat. You know, we cook a lot in duck fat. We do a lot of our potatoes in duck fat.
That's sort of the sneaky thing that people can do. It's funny, you think about doing... You want to do burgers that are healthier for, like, family or something like that to make a chicken burger or a turkey burger. The problem is you go to form it and there's no fat. But if you have a little bit of rounded off duck fat, you sneak that in there.
Yes.
It all works out.
Right, right.
And the thing is that it kind of, like, it's going to be what melts out in the pan, just like any other burger that you might cook. But you end up tossing that burger around in the duck fat, which really doesn't hurt that nice lean chicken or turkey meat that, you know, that you made the burger out of for a second.
Well, I'm talking about animal fat. You know, when you're making pate, if you make it at home, that would be probably pretty rare. But if you were, you know, you need a certain amount of fat in your force meat in order to have a good pate that has good texture. So that's another use for fat.
Making
sausages.
Making
if you make
pate
sausage
at home. Sausage is one thing, but making pates at home is sort of like the Don Quixote of cooking for, because not everybody in the world wants that necessarily, and it is a lot to produce.
It is. It's a lot of work.
You know,
and you have to have a meat grinder.
Hopefully, have an event for it. Yes, and you have to have
a meat grinder. That's not the easiest. But you can't get an attachment for your
maybe a force meat funnel. You know, that's
for your mixer. Well, or yeah, I mean, it's not that. I mean, you can even get a pasta attachment for your mixer too. So if you
But I sidetracked you on the fats used for the...
For the meats, yeah. I mean, with sausages, you know, it's probably 20% at least fat. And if you're grinding your own meat for hamburger, if you are doing something like that, maybe you've got buffalo or you just, you know, want to make a deer burger or whatever, you know, you have to... Those are lean animals. They need a huge amount of fat, actually, to make those burgers edible.
It's not that they don't have flavor, because the meat has intense
tons
flavor.
Tons of flavor, yeah.
But there's no texture. If you have no texture, you can't deliver that flavor. That's sort of the point. I mean, that's... Fat serves as that, like, the flavor delivery agent. Fat may not be exactly flavor. It has flavor, but it actually allows you to notice it. It's a little bit like seasoning food.
Mm-hmm.
It maybe in its own way, it is sort of part of seasoning food.
I think that's also when you're looking for ground meat. You know, if you don't want to grind your own at home, when you're looking for it, you want to know what the fat content is so that you know what you're getting into when you go to cook something. You know, do you need to add more fat? Do you need to maybe put a little bit of bacon in something, you know, or whatever you could add that you already have at home? Or if you happen to have a tub of duck fat, you could, you know.
Yeah.
And you can buy that at the grocery store. It's available.
So in your refrigerator at home, you have... The cream with the heavy cream on top. You have a pot of duck fat and a bottle of good champagne. Is
have
that
you
pretty
seen
much
my
what
refrigerator?
You got? No.
Seems
that,
like
is
it.
Is that what's going on?
There are three different types. There are three different types of butter. My refrigerator is empty unless I'm cooking. First of all, pretty much, but I have to have some staples, which for me is breakfast food. So yes, I have three different types of butter: salted, unsalted, high fat, lower fat, and I absolutely have duck fat and, you know, typically something else, whatever that might be, something from the restaurant that I saved or bacon fat that I saved from breakfast or whatever. And I have three different types of olive oil at all times. I have to have different types of olive oil. It's a sauce. It's the same thing. It's a sauce. I think of it as a sauce. So it needs to have different tastes.
I know one of the things that when we started getting there's a particular olive oil that I found for one of the restaurants that I thought was the biggest deal in the world. And I told them I'd take care of it when we brought it to the States. So we put it in a refrigerated container, just like you would, you know, very fine wine. And we brought it in and we had it brought to the restaurant and we put it in the wine cellar. And we keep it in the wine cellar because it's 55 degrees. So it's not under lights and it's not in a pantry that varies in temperature in a kitchen or something like that. And I know when we first started doing that, everyone working in that restaurant thought I was completely out of my mind. But every time you pour that oil into a plate for a client...
It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I just said, please, just pick it up and smell mm-hmm. the plate.
It was like liquid gold. It was gorgeous.
Besides the color maintaining, just the aroma alone.
Sure.
Is completely remarkable.
I mean, liquid gold in form of value. I mean, it was a beautiful thing. Yeah, very flavorful, very pretty.
I mean, that's handling those things, the temperature, I always feel bad. It's like you want to handle really good olive oil or really good nut oils, not just like any old pantry item. I mean, you need to have them at a cooler place. You need to not have them in direct light. I mean, they will break down.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question they'll break down.
I think that's one of the things, you know, people come into my kitchen in my house and there's nothing on the countertop. I have everything put away because I want to have as much work area as possible. My kitchen is beautiful, but it's simple. And I keep just the amount of olive oil that I don't have more than one bottle of each. I may have three, but I use a lot of olive oil, whether you think I do or not. And I go through it pretty rapidly. If I didn't, I wouldn't keep three different types of olive oil. I would just have one. But I do have a pretty cold cellar, which is where, you know, I store my wine and at home. And thankfully, you know, that's a perfect place for backups. If you're having a party, you know, whatever, you want to buy things ahead, that is a nice place to store a lot of things. I mean, obviously, that's where root cellars are. You know, that's where everyone used to store their product before refrigeration or in, spring houses.
With butter, I think, you know, the other thing about, you're talking about having three different kinds of butter. Imagine that you had like some kind of casserole with a bunch of onions go into your fridge and your butter was in there, not wrapped up tight. What happens to that butter? You know what I mean? That's
right. No, everything.
That's a tough thing. I think if you're going to spend the money to have really fantastic butter, or if you want to have butter that you can use for pastry, even doesn't have to be the most expensive stuff in the world, and you're going to use that for pastry, and you probably don't want it to smell like last night's Kung Pao chicken or the half the fried bologna sandwich, which some of us may love those things.
God, that would be in your refrigerator.
It could land there once in a while, yeah.
Yeah, you need to keep that butter stored
properly.
There
is fat in a fried bologna sandwich,
and wrapped up and covered, definitely.
Let's go from some of the basics and a little bit of basic techniques of how to use fat and sautéing and all that kind of business and how to store things. Let's take a few moments and let's talk about the exotics. I know you love to talk about the exotics. That's right. You know what I'm talking about, nut oils. Avocado oil extract.
Oh, God, I've never used that in my life.
Right?
Yeah.
I guarantee you my grandmother had avocado oil that she probably bought in 1972.
Oh, gosh.
That's used for one recipe that terrified everyone that came to some cocktail party.
Aw.
And was definitely still there in like 1988 when I opened her pantry. And I cannot even describe what it smelled like. But fresh, it's pretty interesting stuff.
Okay.
And fresh, it's actually nice on like a piece of grilled fish or something. If you have a pretty lean fish like a wahoo or a swordfish or something, and you're grilling that, say, medium, and you get a little bit of a char on that a little bit of black pepper, fresh lemon, avocado oil, is pretty darn nice and simple. But I think of them as being sort of exotics. Are there certain ones that you like to use the best?
Well, you've already mentioned walnut oil. I mean, I haven't used walnut oil in a long time, but I used to use it all the time.
It's hard to get it really fresh.
Yeah, I love good walnut oil, and definitely pistachio oil. I had someone send me a number of samples of different oils, and they were doing a really good job with it, and they were really fresh. And gosh, pistachio oil can be so very pretty. But yeah, you just have to determine that it's nice and fresh. But any of the nut oils really are appealing. And then, I can't help but think when I start thinking of a nut oil, then I start thinking of balsamic vinegar and apple vinegar and, you know, different types of fruit vinegars that just go so beautifully with the nut oils. So it's such an, I think when people
just
come to
make a little bit of a wacky dressing for a
exactly.
simple salad.
Yeah, and it's so easy to make a dressing, you know, and I think people might be a little bit you know, I think they feel challenged by it. Well, I'm just thinking of my own family because they'll come
over.
People
want to put 11 things in something.
Yeah, it's so simple to make a vinaigrette. And, you know, even when my family's there, we'll have maybe a salad with, it's a couple of different greens and fresh apples. And, you know, because I have a Persian member in my family, we eat a lot of dried fruit and fresh fruit and nuts and herbs, you know, always whole pieces of mint in. And, you know, this wonderful salad that's already really sort of really beautiful, really only needs good extra, you know, honestly, I would dress something like that with extra virgin olive oil, salt and pepper, and that's the end of the story. And, you know, if you bring in a fruit vinegar or you bring in fresh lime juice, I mean, one of my favorite dressings is simply fresh lime juice with good extra virgin olive oil and salt and pepper. And that's what I will eat with a lot of things like tomatoes or greens, especially a spicy green. And I think also when you think about how are you using your oil, you're thinking about all the other products, obviously. And if you have a spicy green like arugula or a cress that has that sort of almost inherent horseradishy flavor to it, you're getting so much flavor from that.
You don't need
a lot of acid in your dressing. So That's where the oils really do come in, and tossing something like that with walnut oil would be really pretty. And then you know what, you're crumbling a little bit of goat cheese on, or you have a good piece of aged Reggiano that you grate onto your salad, or whatever you choose, and then you have something that really is very delicious and lots of flavor.
It's funny, I have a weird little story about hazelnut oil. There's a little tiny restaurant in Piemonte in the north, and hazelnut trees are everywhere. And these guys would do, like, one of the things they do when you sit down is they would toast the hazelnuts in a pan to the point of rendering out some of the oil fresh from the nuts, and then toast bread, a particular bread that they made, in that same pan.
In the pan?
Mm, yeah.
That's a good idea.
And it's like, I'm like, okay, here we are. It's like, okay, this is 2,000-year-old technology.
That sounds good.
And your first antipasti is to get this piece of bread.
Okay.
There could be no more simple, slow food. It's like, okay, fresh bread that we made and fat from the nuts that grow on our trees that we literally just cracked to toast in the pan to render the oil. You know, it's just like giant steel pan.
Sounds good.
I mean, just like that's just the most ridiculous.
I love things that are simple and beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, there's zero breakdown of the oil because the oil is never even cooled from being rendered. It was not extracted. It wasn't heat extracted, pressure extracted. It's just the most basic possible function, you know. And then the nuts themselves, they candy them and they give them to you at the end.
Oh, that's nice.
So you end up with the same.
That's
it's
cool.
Like the same ones. Like this, very simple restaurant, very simple menu, but that's always starts and always ends the same way. And you walk in the place and it's surrounded by the hazelnut trees. You know, you talk about product
beautiful.
Of the environment.
Yeah, that's great.
But I don't know how you refuse to, how you walk in there on a low-fat diet, I don't know.
Apparently you don't.
You start with a piece of bread fried in the nut oil that they are making for you in the middle of the room.
Happy people.
So when we come back, we're going to get into the mysteries of deep fat frying on the Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, we want to get into deep fat frying.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we did not talk about, we started talking about animal fats. We didn't talk about where they came from. I don't say from the animals, okay? Dr. Doolittle.
Mm-hmm.
So where do the animal fats, like that jar of duck fat or that jar of chicken fat, where would that have come from? Why would you have that? Let's say you buy a Magret duck breast. You have to render that fat,
right,
the fatty side of the breast anyway. You want to get rid of, you're going to melt off about half that fat in a heavy, slow pan.
Right.
Maybe even a little bit more than that. What do you do with the fat that's in that pan?
All you have to do is let it cool down a little bit and then pass it through a fine strainer. And then you have that to use for your own purposes, which is perfect. Even if you go right into the refrigerator, well, once it's cooled down, you go into the refrigerator with it. A lot of the bits and pieces will fall to the bottom of the of whatever you've stored it in. And you can just not either choose to use that or not to. But oftentimes that will have some really good flavor because it's actually rendered meat juices as well. So you're kind of all the way around good there. Magre is the best way to get good fat to work with because there is so much extra fat on the outside.
You just have to cook it at low enough temperature that
you have to cook it very gently.
The fat keeps its integrity, and that takes time.
And you also score, so you do little hash marks on the outside of the breast on the fat side, and that allows the fat to render out better. And
when you say render out, it literally melts out of the.
It does.
The fatty part of the breast.
And you should be, this is the perfect use for your steel pan. And as you say, on very low heat and just gently, gently, gently do it. And then you're going to have this gorgeous fat to work with.
All right. Let's get into deep fat frying. Why do you think people are scared of deep fat frying or, that's not as a cook, but I mean, literally as a consumer, why do you think that they're scared of?
Well, they think it's unhealthy, I suppose.
And because they see you immersing the product in the fat.
Right. But in the end, if you know how to fry, it doesn't absorb that much fat. It just absorbs enough to cook the food. And, you should obviously be draining it. So then that there's really little fat absorbed.
Because it just sears the outside of the – let's just say it's a piece of catfish or something.
Mm-hmm.
If you're giving it a little bit of a batter or something like that – it's searing on the outside of it to begin with.
Right.
It's not even penetrating.
Exactly. It's not like that fish is full of fat.
No.
It's just whatever. Well, and the less breading you have, the less absorption of fat you're going to have. So if you do a light breading procedure, there's not going to be a chance for there to be much fat absorption.
So the fish that's inside of there, actually it just steams.
Exactly. And that's why you like it
that,
so much.
Inside of that seared exterior.
Exactly. It's like, exactly. That's a good way of putting it. It's like it's encased in something and it's completely protected. And that's in the end, it becomes almost a moist way of cooking something.
Yeah.
It doesn't almost. It is a moist way of cooking something. And therefore, that's another reason why you like fried food so much, if it's not overcooked. And that's the whole thing. If you get a piece of fried chicken, which is a pretty big piece of meat. If you have a decent sized breast where you leave the bone in the legs or the thighs, that takes a while to fry. And, if we fry something like a chicken breast, we actually do it in two drops. In other words, we drop it, maybe cook it for like 3 minutes, and then we bring it back up and allow it to rest and to sort of let it carry over on its own for a little while, that carryover cooking, and then drop
it
again.
Let the temperature kind of penetrate towards the interior a little bit and let that crust set on the outside.
Right, and that's how you don't end up with super dark chicken. Also, your oil has to be fresh, not used oil. And that at home, that's what I assume it would be. You would be working with absolutely fresh oil, which is great. And I think that's the whole thing. Any kind of breading procedure has to be a light batter or a light amount of flour. And that's the whole thing. If you're doing something like beignets.
We talked about fear. Let's say people love beignets.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to deep fry at home, what is the best way to set up to deep fry beignets at home?
Mm-hmm. You make your batter first, and you need to let it rest a little bit before you use it. And beignet batter is, what we would do is sparkling water, a little bit of baking powder, a little bit of baking soda.
It's just a little bit of sparkling water.
Right. And we use cake flour, which is a lighter flour. And so all the way around, you have a lighter batter. And
less protein, less gluten. It ends up giving you a tender something instead of a stiff something, right?
Right. And you have your batter ready to go and your food is prepped, whether it's a shrimp beignet or a calamari beignet or... you want to put vegetables in that batter.
But what do you put it in? How big of a vessel do you need? Let's say you have, finger-sized pieces of vegetables that you're doing as beignets. You want to do a bunch of crispy vegetables, and you made a nice aioli or something with herbs for an hors d'oeuvre. How big of a vessel, if you have finger-sized vegetables, do you need of fat?
I would probably have a gallon I'm sorry, a half gallon for home of batter. So, you know, I would put it in a bowl, a big bowl, so that you have plenty of room to work, because you are going to want to be able to work and dip your product in and move it around and make sure it is coated.
The batter itself. But the fat needs to go into a good-sized pot.
Yes, and you do need a good-sized pot.
Yeah. And how much fat do you think you need for
probably
that kind of product? If you're frying, say, a dozen pieces at a time.
2 gallons. I would say 2 gallons. And that's
I think that's the thing people get freaked out about.
Agree.
You go and you buy
all this oil.
You buy 2 gallons of corn oil or 2 gallons of peanut oil.
It is pretty strange, because I've had to do it at home too. And of course, I don't bring the oil from the restaurant. I go to the grocery store and buy it.
One of the 75-pound things of peanut oil.
I don't bring that home.
I can see you pulling it out of your trunk. A couple of bodies or something.
I'm in there buying, 6 bottles of corn oil. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So it is kind of weird to fry at home. I agree with that. Well, then you want to talk about stories. When you and I were still married, we were living out on Western Run Road on a beautiful farm.
Oh, this is a long time ago.
Oh, yes. And my parents came, and my mom and dad are from York, Pennsylvania, and they love fried oysters. And I made fried oysters for them at the house. And I think that's one of the first times that I fried oysters at home. And I did it only because of my parents, because I loved them so much.
And afterwards, you had a nice big vat of oil.
I had a big container of oil. I'm in the middle of the country on a 60-acre horse farm, and I'm thinking, no problem. I'll just put that pot out back. I'm not dealing with that tonight. You know, you're entertaining. You've got family there. You don't want to deal with that. I put it out the back door.
There are no bears. Yeah.
There are no bears. Well, apparently there's a dog living next door, 2 of them. Our neighbors had Vimaramers, if that's how you say it. Is that how you say it? Tony's reaction is always like, Well, how do you call them? What do you call them?
Weimaraner.
Okay, that. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I didn't say it. I didn't say it with a German accent. Excuse me. So next day, I get up, and I'm making breakfast for everybody, and there is not a drop of oil in that pot. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
That's because
what happened to the oil?
It's because the deep fat fairy came and took it.
Yeah, uh-huh. 2 dogs came and licked it out of that pot, and I called the lady that owned the property.
Robin, yeah.
Robin. And I said, oh my gosh, Robin, I don't know what happened, but I can only imagine. And she was like, yeah, my dogs are, having a problem right now. I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't ever do that. And it's not safe anywhere. So what you do is you cool it down somewhere in your house, probably in your basement, and away from any pets that you might have.
Because the deep fat fairy is not coming to take your
fat
away.
It is not, unfortunately. Yeah. I wish there was a deep fat fairy. And I save the bottles, obviously, and the lids, and then I just strain it back into the bottles. And you're going to have a little extra or a little less, depending on how much frying you did, and it should work out okay.
Yeah,
so that's what I do. I just pour it back into the bottles.
People get a little bit freaked out, I think, because the thought of you went and you bought those 6 bottles of corn oil or something, and you fried it, and you're like, what do I do? How do I keep this?
Right.
I
wouldn't use it again anyway, so get rid
of it. I mean, it's like, tomorrow I'm having another party the same size.
Right.
And I'm going to do the same thing.
Yeah, of course you're not. So
there's a certain commitment.
Well, right, and that's
an
expense.
And probably expense to deep fat frying.
Exactly, and then you have to clean the pot. And quite frankly, when you fry in your house, it makes a mess of your kitchen. It gets on your walls. It gets everywhere. It just flies through the air.
If you don't ventilate well, your room will smell like fried catfish.
Yeah, it's awful. And so it's really just no fun to fry at home, I have to say. Even when
we've done a great job
of
teaching people how to deep fry at home, making them very motivated to do that.
Just don't fry at home. Go eat it out somewhere.
Just drink the glass of champagne you should be having of the beignets and talk about beignets.
But don't actually make them.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is that we used to have one of those.
Because your whole house is going to smell and make a mess.
Yeah. It went to your house, but you have the little tabletop fryer that we used to have.
Yeah.
And that, at least that makes it easier. But that thing wasn't easy to clean either. No. I'd almost rather be in a pot
I don't think it's that hard going into a pot. And I do tend to. I will strain and seal and use that oil again, if it's within a month or something like that. I mean, that's...
I won't, but that's fine if you do that.
I have some charity dinners coming up this summer that I have to do.
We'll just get you a 35-pounder from the restaurant.
Yeah, boy.
There you go.
Let's get serious about one last important fatty topic. You mentioned biscuits. And biscuits, sort of bake pastry. The places where, and when I talked about making a pot pie, and that means making a pastry crust, the basic process of cutting fat into pastry or into a biscuit, you want to talk about how you end up with a texture so the biscuit's not like a piece of lead.
Right.
Or that the pastry crust is not tough.
Yeah.
Because those are things that people struggle with, because I think they try to work the bejesus out of things, right?
And that's the whole problem. You don't want to work the glutens. You're not making bread. If you're making bread, you'd want to work the gluten. You're making pastry. You want
it to be light and delicate. Quality butter and the type of flour, right?
Right. So,
or quality fat and type of flour.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you're making pie dough, you can use all-purpose flour. And obviously, you're going to cut butter into it. And one of the things I like about the description of making pie dough or making biscuits, particularly making biscuits, is that when you're cutting in the butter into the flour, it should look like cornmeal eventually. And I love that because that's what everybody can kind of envision that. And that is what happens when you make biscuits in particular. And one of the things I taught my AM prep guy when I first taught him how to make our biscuits, which we used to serve at one of our restaurants.
You're going to just get requests now.
Oh, boy. was that it had to be quick. You know, a baldo. You put it in the pot. You put it in the mixer. And once you add the buttermilk, it's got to be quick, on high speed. Get it done. Get it out. And it's handled very delicately. And when you make biscuits, you have baking powder in there anyway. And one of the things about baking powder is baking powder turns into feeling like salt in your mouth, on your palate. And a lot of people, or not a lot of people, might think, oh my gosh, there's too much salt in this, and it's actually the baking powder. And that's one of the issues you can also have when you make beignet batter, is that you have to be very careful with the amount of baking powder you put in anything that you make. But getting back to cutting the fat in, I mean, a biscuit is the perfect place to put chicken fat or pork fat or duck fat into a biscuit. But I mean, obviously, if you're going to the range of putting duck fat into a biscuit, you better be serving that with a piece of foie gras, or serving it with a piece of pork, or serving it with a piece of duck.
Serving your breakfast serious. With duck bacon and really good eggs.
Right, yeah. Right. You know, use chicken fat. That's more breakfasty to me, or lighter, yeah. Obviously, in flavor and profile.
I know just in watching my great-grandmother, she would always go about half and half with the animal fat and butter on those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that makes sense. Because
to get a little more predictable result, I think, is kind of what she was after.
And when you do go to make that pie dough or tart dough, again, you just want to work it enough where it comes together. Once it comes together, that's when you're done. And you can do that really, I mean, you can make pie dough with your hands and with a fork and
people,
a knife.
I think, they sometimes think that they're making bread, you know, where they have to, like, work that dough and knead it and stuff.
Let's
and that's
see.
The stuff that makes it tough.
Right. And you want it, as my mother would say, you want it to be tender. And it's the same thing. When she makes pot pie, she makes it the Pennsylvania Dutch way, which is she makes her dough, she rolls it out, and she cuts it with a pie cutter, actually. So it's squares of dough. It's rolled out. It almost looks like pasta. So it's squares of dough. And oh my gosh, is that one of the best things? I could eat that right now thinking about it. But that is, you know, I remember when probably 20 years ago, she taught me how to make it when I had started cooking. And then recently, I asked her to show me to make it again because it had been so long. And she, of course, she doesn't have a recipe. She makes it just like my grandmother did, which is, oh, put a little water in and then
she knows what goes in it.
Put an egg
feel.
In. Yep. Exactly. And I'm like, wow. You know, and that's, of course, that's how I.
Yeah, my great-grandmother, there was nothing ever written down.
Right.
She just made things that were good.
Yep. Thank goodness.
Honestly, one thing that will settle people down for, we're talking about cutting fat into flour for any kind of pastry, get a pastry cutter.
Yes.
It looks sort of like a baker's kung fu tool.
Mm-hmm.
Has a handle to it and a bunch of sort of what look like knives coming out of it.
Those are pretty great.
And they're terrific. Well, and you can contact us at foremanwolf@wypr.org if you have questions about any of the topics on the program, if you have recipes you want to share or recipes that you want clarified. You can also find this or any other Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine programs at the WYPR website, wypr.org. Just go to the Foreman Wolf homepage. Anyway, I think that's about all we have time for. It's all the fat that we can make you handle today, I think. On Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine, I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Thanks for listening on WYPR.